So we'll kick off this morning's session, which is about rural communities adjusting to change. And our first speaker is Professor Jim Barber. And Jim is the Vice-Chancellor at the University of New England, based in Armidale. And Jim today is going to be talking about education and research to sustain rural communities and the role of universities. So I welcome Jim to the stage.
Thanks, Paula. Yes, well, one explanation is that for the slightly depleted numbers is, of course, everyone had a big night last night. The other one is that I'm leading off with the first talk. That's the other reason why maybe half the audience left. But anyway, it is a great pleasure to be here. I have to admit at the outset that the title I was given, this one, Education and Research to Sustain Rural Communities, is actually beyond me, especially in the time available. Because it presumably takes in all levels of education. We're talking, of course, about primary, secondary, vocational and university. So, and nor does it actually restrict my geographical reach, because there's no reason why metropolitan universities can't contribute to rural sustainability either. So I have to admit that that's a bit too big for me. What I want to do, in the interests of time and relevance, what I want to do is to limit my comments to the contribution of regional universities to rural sustainability. And in the time that I have available, I want to answer one question and make one recommendation. My question is, what do regional universities have to contribute to the sustainability of rural communities? What do they already contribute, maybe if I put it that way? And then secondly, I want to put it to you that so much more could be achieved if only we had the policy drivers to make it happen. So, let me start with the first point. What is the contribution of regional universities to the sustainability of rural communities? And let me start by saying there's been considerable debate about this in recent times. Some of you may have read the so-called Grattan Institute report, which in a nutshell suggests that regional universities actually contribute very little to regional economies and to regional sustainability. I don't want to critique that document. I've actually spent a fair bit of time reading it. I think, and you might expect me to say this, that there are quite a number of flaws, particularly methodological ones in there, that really make the claim much more dramatic than the evidence. That said, I want to say this. I don't know why is it doing that? Oh, okay. Because you could take me back to the beginning. Can you take me back? That's it, thanks. I'll get on to that. There's a lot of debate. Do regional universities actually contribute anything? As far as I'm aware, nobody has ever put what I would call a counterfactual. What would happen in a region if the university shut down? So that's what I've put a bit of thought into, and that's what I want to present to you today. Just assemble some of the data, and much of it relates to the immediate New England region. I don't apologise for that, because that's where the epicentre of the effect would be felt. But there will be ripple effects, as you'll see, that go beyond there. So the first question I want to ask is, well, what difference would it make to students if we shut... And I want to use UNE as a case study, only because it makes it more specific. Having done that, I then want to make some general statements based on what would happen if we shut UNE down. What does this mean about the contribution of regional universities? Okay, so the first question is, what would it mean for students if we shut the university down? Well, of the 1,200 domestic students who commence study at Armidale campus each year, it's reasonable to propose that around 200 or 300 of them would not have gone to university at all if it weren't for UNE's recruitment and pathways program and low-priced accommodation. And we know that because we survey our students, and at least 100 of them tell us every year of our commencing cohort that they couldn't afford to study outside of Armidale because of the associated costs of relocation and living expenses. And around another 200 or 300 tell us that they could relocate to the city or somewhere else, but they'd be under significant financial stress to do so. In support of that proposition, consider that chart that I've got there, which shows the average cost of living for a student per annum. And the one on the extreme left is the cost of living on campus at the University of New England at the time that this was done, about $9,500 a year. If they were to move out of the college and live in the town, that's the next bar across, it would cost them about $14,000 a year. If they lived on campus at a metropolitan university, University of Sydney or somewhere like that, it would cost them $16,700 a year. And if they lived off campus in a metropolitan centre, it would cost them $24,600. So from a cost of living point of view, there's an imperative, really, for regional students to be able to access accommodation and their education in the region. In addition to our financial data, we know from our admissions records that each year there are another 200 or so students who couldn't gain access to university education if it weren't for UNE's pathway program or alternative entry scheme. And as for UNE's distance education students, around 1,500 of them are within range of a UNE access centre like the one here in Narrabri. So all of these access centres that we have dotted around, we know, attract, recruit and retain students, some physical presence. So that's what's in it for students if UNE were to close down. What would happen to the demography of the region if we closed down? Well, this chart summarises it. It shows the brown bar on the base bar shows what we could call the Armidale base. That's if you back out all of the people who are associated with the university, what is the base that in Armidale left? And if you look at the distribution of those brown lines, you'll see that there's a bit of a bump in the 10 to 14 area. By the way, that's due to the schools that we have there. We have a number of schools, boarding schools. If you took them out, it'd be worse still. You can see that apart from that, the lower end, the real rise is in the 45 to 49 year age group, now 50 to 54. And then if you add in the UNE students, the green bars, you see what happens. If you add in the UNE staff, there's about 3,500 of those staff and their families. That's the red bar. And then if you add in the what we call the community multipliers, that is all of the services and jobs and people who are attracted because of the university, you now get a very different shape demography. In a nutshell, and without wishing to be disrespectful, if we were to take the university out of Armidale, we'd be left with really a nursing home, or at least a very elderly population. So that's what's in it for the demography. What about work? What would happen to UNE to employment if we shut down? Well, we know this, and this is not very well publicised. 78% of all UNE's on-campus graduates, 78% of them, secure their first job in the region, in a regional area. And 43% of those go back to their home region. So the vast majority of our on-campus students work in the region. So the effect on skilled labour in the region if we shut down would be dramatic. And by the way, the other 28% who don't go, their number is replaced by the students who come from the city to study at Armidale and then live in the region. So they net each other out. We do get students coming from Sydney and elsewhere to live on campus, and they make up for any of the drift of Armidale students to the city. UNE itself employs 13% of all workers in Armidale, and when the multipliers are added, UNE accounts for 1 in 4 jobs in the city of Armidale, and we make up 33% of the New England economy. So just imagine what that would do if you walked up the mall and took out one in every three of every shop and every industry. UNE's research and development work adds another 300 skilled workers. These are direct employees in our research industries, ABRI, like your cotton CRC. plus multipliers to various businesses in Armidale. So not only would the number of jobs decline markedly if UNE were to close, but the type of employment would, of course, be very different. The academics and professional staff of UNE bring partners who are themselves professionals and paraprofessionals, such as teachers, accountants, medical staff, and so on. And so that chart shows the mix of our jobs that UNE accounts for. The brown bar again shows what we might call the Armidale base, and then if you add to it UNE and the UNE entities, you can see that we change not only the sheer number of jobs, but also the distribution of the bars. The next point is about what would be the effect on housing and other capital if UNE were to close. Well, the average housing price in the surrounding cities in Tamworth, when I did my survey at the beginning of this year, in Tamworth, Inverell, Glen Innes and Tenterfield, is, you might be interested to know, $216,000. In Armidale, it's about 25% higher at $268,000. Without UNE's presence, almost one in three houses would be unnecessary, so it's reasonable to expect that house values would fall to a figure closer to that of our neighbouring towns. And by the way, Armidale has experienced this already. When UNE fell on hard times in the 1990s, some 200 jobs were lost, it's around 15%, at the university, and housing values fell by 20% in 1 year. So by extrapolating from other towns in the New England region, we would be reasonable to expect that Armidale's retailing capacity would only need to be around half its current levels. So businesses like Bunnings, BW and so on would be unnecessary. The city would just no longer have sufficient demand to attack businesses from out of town. And finally, what would happen to culture? Thank you. Because the university attracts students, academics and their families from all over the world, Armidale is a very multicultural place. For artists, musicians and scholars, the city offers a wide range of cultural opportunities. We've got our own symphony orchestra. That still blows me away. In a town of 26,000, we have a full symphony orchestra. The New England Regional Art Museum houses the internationally acclaimed Hinton Collection, the Aboriginal Cultural Keeping Place, and numerous theatres, sporting clubs and so on would not be viable if it were to close down. And I move finally, what would happen in the area of research if we were to close down? Now, I've put up here just some of the logos of the research that we conduct in there around at the university. And this contributes directly and indirectly to rural sustainability. The point I want to make is that we do specialise in rural research in almost every front. You know us, of course, through our work with cotton, but there's so many others. And in no particular order, I could mention the cotton CRC. I could mention our work on regional governance and local planning, our work on the Centre for Mathematics Education for Rural and Regional Australia. It won a Prime Minister's Key Achievement Award in the Closing the Gap report. Our work on regional urban stream restoration, where we monitor the health of 18 coastal catchments in northern New South Wales. Our Unison project for transplanting rural innovative ideas into action. Our biochar project, where we trap ammonia from poultry manure in biochar to increase the lifespan of the litter and recycle the biochar as soil amendment. Our strategies for preparing law graduates to practice in rural and regional Australia. And our smart farm work, where we are using satellite services to help farmers increase productivity using the very latest technology. These are all rural-focused research projects that contribute directly. So, and as I say, that's not an exhaustive list. So then let me now get rid of the question I asked. What's in it for rural the sustainability to have a regional university? Well, in summary, I put it to you that these things. First of all, we contribute to the affordability of tertiary education for regional students. We provide access to distance education. We underwrite the demography. We change the demography of the region towards young people. We are the principal source of a skilled workforce. We're a major employer in the region. We contribute to capital gains on real estate investments. We provide culture and sporting services, and our research is on focus on regional and rural universities. Regional and rural significance. Given all of this, it always amazes me how regional universities seem to be called upon to justify their existence all the time. I would put it to you that given a list like this, we don't need to do anything more than exist to justify our existence. That said, and this is the point I want to conclude on, there's so much more we could do. Mel Peters made the point last night that there's a bit of a policy vacuum in the, to that I say, hear, hear. There is, and without going into too much detail, a single idea dominating higher education policy in Australia today, and it is the free market. What this year brought us was a voucher system where students can take their entitlement to tertiary education to any course, any university they want to. It is a demand-driven system, it is a single policy driver, and it's every man for himself. We're doing okay in this environment, but the point is, I can't guarantee you that in years going in the future, I won't shut agricultural science down and put on theatre studies. I can't guarantee you that we will do research in, we will continue to be Australia's leader in animal genetics, instead of which I've got early childhood education. Now, the reason I can't guarantee you is because the policy is all about student choice, student demand. That's what we have to put on, and that's where we derive. We derive our income like any other retailer by putting out their products that consumers want. Now, I don't object to that. I think we should competition is good. We should be forced to compete. I've got no problems with it. But I do think that we ought to have policy levers that will underwrite the fortunes of these regional universities and make us contribute to rural sustainability, because there is no incentive whatever for our university to do anything for these regions. I'm sorry, but that's the fact. That's not how we earn our income. The fact that we are where we are is in some extent a historical legacy that we've been given. For us to preserve it, I think we need policy drivers. And I just want to mention four to you. The first one is we need incentives for students to attend regional universities. One way of doing that is to extend HECS, that's the Higher Education Contribution Scheme, extend that to student residential accommodation in the regions. Now students can take out a income contingent loan, and there is an incentive for them to move out of the cities into the regions. That would make a huge difference. And it doesn't compromise the principle of competition, really. It's just making things more affordable. The second thing I would do, and I've mentioned this to Mal and some of the others in the RDA, we attract performance funding according to our performance on various measures, but they're all the same all over the country. So I get rewarded for my retention rates, for my student satisfaction, all of these things, like any other university. Why can't we, some of our performance funding, be tied to our contribution to the region? Why can't I be rewarded? Why can't I go down to the RDA that Mal runs and say, you've got these priorities, and the government will tie some of my performance funding to my contribution to what you do? Now, they've got various priorities, among them, for example, being Indigenous health. I've got a medical school. I've got a big allied health. Why can't some of my funding be according to how much difference we make to our Aboriginal health in the region? At the moment, there's no incentive for me to care at all. What I care about is getting people in to buy my courses. So there's another policy driver they could do, which I hope you agree doesn't compromise the principle of competition, but gives me an incentive. The other things I would do, there's talk amongst the Group of Eight, the top most prestigious universities, to deregulate the price of education. They want to be able to charge students more to attend Melbourne or Sydney or whatever, and there's a lot of resistance from regional universities to that. I say to them, go for it. By all means, we'll compete with you on price now. If you deregulate, The only thing is, if you're going to deregulate the student contribution, I want you to deregulate the government contribution as well. So the government is in it, like the students, have choice as to where they want to spend more of their money. And I'd be in there saying, governments, you have a responsibility to spend more of your money in the regions than in the cities. So we could, in a sense, make up for the shortfall in student contribution by having a larger government contribution. If it's fair enough for the students, it ought to be fair enough for the government. And the final thing I would do, and I'll finish here, under the review of base funding, which has just been completed, the base funding of universities, there was a proposal in there, it's sort of been buried, that the government ought to fund what are called flagship programs and courses. That is, things, national beacons, they privilege them, and say, well, we want you to compete, but you know what? Animal science at the University of New England is too valuable a national asset to be thrown to the wolves of competition. We're going to favour that one, and we'll make a flagship for the country there. And again, that would be in just that one area, and it would preserve a national treasure. Anyway, my main point is there's much policy work that needs to be done. What we have is a blunt instrument, a single policy idea. It's not going to protect in the long term regional unit. We'll compete, we'll fight, and I'm confident, given the way we've started out, we've started very well, that we'll survive. But I can't guarantee you, that, given the current policy settings, that we will look anything like the University of New England in 10 years' time, unless those policy drives are in place. Thank you.
Okay, nice passionate start kicking on from yesterday afternoon session. So we've got time for some quick questions for Jim. Some hands.
My name is Jim. I chair the Regional Development Australia Board for the Far North in South Australia, which covers an area of about 827,000 square kilometres. I also work for the University of South Australia at the Wyala campus. Everything that you said resonated. One thing that I wanted to add in terms of the policy and to comment about the comment from Val Peters last night that I missed about the policy vacuum is that we need to ensure that the challenges of difference between regional, rural, and remote are acknowledged because, for example, my region, in terms of higher education,
thank you for that. Actually, thank you for saying that, because when I was putting this together, I struggled, you know, should I make these distinctions? I know exactly what you mean. And so I've glossed over an awful lot, but I did it for the purpose of trying to get my main point out, but I do accept that point. And in fact, you know, we've created a regional universities network. The University of South Australia is not part of it, but we have. And what struck us when we did it was how different every one of those regions were. I mean, they're just, you know, okay, when you almost feel like saying we're the non-capital city universities, rather, because they're so different.
Well, because of our lives, Lauren, my family and I actually live in London, and I have no other prejudices than me.
Yep.
And I agree with you 100%, but I think sometimes Armadale doesn't value what the women does give, the structure that's there for employment and the side effects that flow on from the income coming. One question that I guess does concern me is, with the changing face of universities and how they're being delivered in any way, do you forecast a change in Armadale in the bricks and mortar stuff?
Yeah, you've been reading the newspapers, so I've been getting a bit of stick over this, as you know. But I don't know if you were at the breakfast that we just had. Okay, so how do I do it so quickly? In a nutshell, as far as UNE is concerned, we have a dual strategy. And one strategy is certainly to exploit the NBN broadband and go for it in the latest educational technology. And we have this notion of, in the distance area, of becoming what we call a networked university with nodes of high technology sites all around the world. We're launching our first one at the University of California in a few weeks' time in the medical school. So we'll be teaching in real time with the medical staff at the University of California, Irvine. They'll be offering us emergency medicine using their robotics lab. We'll be offering them cardiology. We'll be doing these things together, their staff, our students. So that's what I see, and that scares people in Armidale because they think, wow, so what about us? You know, you're putting these nodes all around the world and it's all about broadband and so on. But that's one part of our strategy. The other part is to use that to try and grow scale and margin in cyberspace, but then to invest the proceeds of that in our on-campus operation, because that's our premium product. It deals with a different demographic, that is more school leaver type, but that, when you think about it, the Armidale campus offers not just the education, but all that formation. And not just on campus, but the whole town, near Am and everything else. And you cannot replicate all of that in cyberspace. So, but it's expensive. I also can't, that doesn't pay for itself. So the idea is generate surpluses in cyberspace using the networked university, invest the proceeds back at Armidale so that we'll have our objective is to be the best residential college university in Australia. So it'll always be our premium product, and it'll always be, if this works, and there's no guarantee it's going to work in this new environment, but if it does, we'll always have a critical presence in Armidale.
Okay, thank you very much, Jim, for that speech. I think it's a great start to the morning.